Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's August 21st, day number 3 of the KPCW Summer Pledge Drive. I've got 61 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 63 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yes, I'll tell you what, we are starting off with some beautiful weather out there with lots of sunshine and fairly comfortable temperatures, as you mentioned. And as we go throughout the day, it's not going to be a bad day. We're looking at mostly sunny to partly sunny skies in the afternoon. Temperatures will be climbing into the lower 80s as we get into the afternoon hour. In Park City and Heber Valley, we're going to be climbing close to 90 degrees this afternoon. So, yes, it's going to be on the toasty side a little bit, but overall should be dry and should be a fairly nice day. Now, as we go into your Thursday, we're going to start to track some significant changes as we'll see partly cloudy skies on your Thursday. Those nice temperatures will start off comfortable with temperatures into the 50s in both the Heber Valley and in Park City. But as we go throughout the afternoon, we'll see those temperatures climbing upper 70s to near 80 in Park City, and we'll be climbing into the 80s, mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. But the big change will be some of that monsoonal moisture returning across the area. So we're going to see an increased chance of some of those scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms developing. Now, right now, it doesn't look like we're going to be seeing the strength of storms that we saw a little earlier this week. But still, we're going to have to keep an eye to the sky because some heavy rain, frequent lightning, and yes, the potential of some isolated flash flooding will exist. We'll continue that chance of showers and thunderstorms. In fact, I think it will increase for both Park City and the Heber Valley as we go into your Friday afternoon. That in turn will help keep temperatures down a little bit as well. So we'll kick the day off with temperatures on Thursday in the 50s, and we'll climb only into the upper 70s to low 80s across Park City and in the Heber Valley only into the low to mid 80s. But again, I do expect a more likely chance of some of those afternoon scattered showers and storms developing on your Friday. So dry today, isolated storms coming in for our Thursday afternoon, and then scattered storms arriving as we get towards our Friday. That's going to be the best day and best chance for rain. Now, after that, going into the weekend, this is what you've been waiting for, folks. And yes, it is still in the cards, and we're excited about that. But looks like we're going to be drying things out as we go throughout the weekend time frame. But the bigger story is not so much the drying things out part, but actually is going to be the fact that these temperatures are going to really cool down. We're talking overnight lows by the time we get towards Sunday down into the upper 30s to lower 40s in the Heber Valley and into the upper 30s and lower 40s for Park City as well. But get this, high temperatures will struggle to get out of the 60s, I think, by the time we get towards Sunday in Park City, and highs will only be in the low to mid 70s. In the Heber Valley. So just an amazing taste of fall. I call it fake fall, so don't let it fool you because it eventually will warm up. But we're going to get several days there for the weekend and the start next week where we're going to be dry and we're going to have some very fall comfortable temperatures. But with the dry air, be aware of that critical fire danger. But overall, we got some ups and downs. But the weekend, oh yeah, we're going to finally have a very nice weekend for any outdoor activities, Leslie.
Okay, thank you, Cedric. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council meets in a two-hour closed session tomorrow before opening for the regular session at 5:30 in the studio with a preview, City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
Doing great. Thank you. So the council may be establishing a nonprofit services advisory committee as a public body. So what does that mean, that all meetings are noticed and open to the public?
That does. And as you know, we have numerous boards and commissions and public bodies as an entity. So it will provide some additional structure, some additional transparency, the ability for the community to follow along. The mayor and council will have to go through an appointment process of the members and otherwise. And it sort of takes their day-to-day deliberations to another level. Comparable would be the Recreation Advisory Board or some other boards and commissions that the municipality has that the community can follow along, can attend a meeting, can request agenda items from time to time. So it really elevates the playing field.
Yeah, so, I mean, what will this committee do? I mean, other than it is a political appointment, I mean, does it get the politics out of which organizations then get grants?
I think this committee is going to do incredibly important work in our community. Rolling this back a little, the municipality partners with nonprofits throughout the community to provide a lot of the essential services that members of our community, at times on the lower income, on the front lines, those needing the most assistance, utilize. So food pantries, clothing redistribution centers, there's a lot of fundamental services on the front lines that the municipality partners with nonprofits to provide that we're not the expert in and we don't have services in. And so This group is awarding funds to partner with nonprofits and other service providers in our community to do some of the most sensitive work out there. So this is going to be an incredibly important job, I would think, as a member of the community. It will also be very rewarding. I mean, to be able to put these resources into the front lines, those that need it the most, this would be a very compelling Border Commission appointment.
Okay, and we should note that KPCW is one of those grant recipients, so we appreciate that. It's for our Spanish-speaking news.
You beat me to it.
Did you find out if the Main Street Area Planning Committee meetings that we talked about last week are also public?
You know, I made an inquiry on that, and I think, to be fair, we're holding them in a public environment, but we're not putting them on an agenda, or we're not inviting the public or the media there. We have a group of residents and Main Street merchants that are working with a consulting team to come up with some initial design concepts. And we want them to be in a safe environment where they can be creative and talk about concepts without perhaps some of the things that they're saying or bringing to bear to be over-sensationalized or become inflammatory. We want people to be in an environment where they feel comfortable and safe to talk about some of the dynamic issues happening in Old Town and Main Street. So while the meetings are technically open to public, they're in a public building, we're not inviting the public in or having the media there. However, the next phase will kick over into a public process here this fall.
All right. So there does seem to be a lot of interest in some of those ideas already kind of thrown out for the future of Main Street. I mean, we saw the town square at the post office. We have seen, you know, possibly housing on the Sandridge parking lot. Some of the ideas that have kind of come from this committee. I mean, should we even be discussing such speculative plans? Or is this the sort of community outreach that you want to do?
I probably couldn't have said it any better. This is the type of creative process and collaborative work that we need to be doing at all times. Throughout our visioning, people have said they want us to be bold, they want us to take some risks, they are interested in some transformative changes. However, I think we all have a responsibility here not to over-sensationalize these initial concepts and design ideas that people are throwing around. One thing government is frequently criticized for is process being deliberative, being methodical. So any type of investment strategy, any type of public-private partnerships, any type of redisposition of public land would require an incredible amount of public process, public hearings, and transparency. This is sort of the first of several stages. The municipality has a long history of having a Main Street area plan. I think it goes back almost 40 years, the first one that was created. And these are the strategies that created our pocket parks, the Whale Bench, the Bear Bench Plaza, some of the Bob Wells Plaza, these investments in Old Town where we're collaborating with the merchants and the residents to balance quality of life and economy. We're really excited that the Main Street merchants are working with us. They've asked for this for a long time. This is the next wave of investment, but I think we all have a responsibility here. No one's coming in here and moving the post office tomorrow or taking the post office out of Old Town. I want people to rest assured there's a long way ahead of us. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
So will this committee be making some recommendations, and if so, when?
I hope so. This fall, we're going to engage in sort of a more public process where they'll be sharing some of their concepts, some of their deliberations and discussions with the mayor and council and the public itself. I want to recall the first public open house is in September, and the date is escaping me now, but that's really the next phase. The next phase is bringing this to the public, having them share their ideas and vetting it publicly.
All right. Any updates on the Olympics consultant RFP? Last we heard, given the tremendous amount of interest in this, and a lot of questions about, to clarify, that RFP was pulled. Was it reissued or?
No, it hasn't yet. And I think, thank you for mentioning that. I've gotten a few questions about that myself. Obviously, spending time at the legislature and down at the Capitol, there is a tremendous amount of interest in this RFP out of the gate. I think that bodes really well for our community. However, I think given all that interest and given all the questions, we had to pull it back and we want to revise the scope. We want to incorporate additional feedback. We want to clarify what our expectations are now that we were actually awarded the games. We had done some of this work ahead of time. And so, you know, the right type of expertise is going to be really important. And so this happens from time to time. We'll put out a call for proposals and we have to pull it back. And that's what occurred here.
All right. So do you have a date on when that might come?
I don't. I wish I did. But we really feel that these refinements are going to put us in a better positioned to receive more quality proposals.
All right. And what about the next steps for a Bonanza Park request for proposal?
So very exciting. We have sort of closed or are just about to close our request for statement of qualifications, where we're pre-certifying or pre-qualifying firms that would be interested in working with us as a master developer on our 5-acre parcel. I think that's probably any day now. And then, I usually like to exceed expectations, but we really hope in the next several weeks we may have an RFP out on the street where we're actually putting the call out for specific proposals. First step is to qualify firms. Second step is to actually put out the call for proposals, where development teams from around the country will assess the 5-acre site, will assess the existing zoning, will assess the public financial tools, will assess all of the goals and visionary work that we did, and actually come up with a proposal that they feel is responsive to what the community's asked for. Our goal is to try to maximize the community benefit and select a qualified developer that we're looking to partner with over several years.
So we're specifically talking about the 5 acres as opposed to the entire, because we had two plans going on.
Right. And so fortunately, the council has provided enough resources in terms of our planners and land use experts. We have two initiatives happening in tandem or happening concurrently. One is the 5-acre plan. We're exploring partnering with a master developer. But two is the overall zoning for the entire area, the Bonanza area. And that's a land use process going through code amendments that the Planning Commission will be working with our team on. Fortunately, we have the resources to do this at the same time. I have experience working in other jurisdictions where you don't have the resources to do both of these. So maybe it's hearkening back to that visioning statement of being bold, getting some things done, willing to be transformative. We're trying to do both at the same time.
Yeah. And Park and Malatesta and I, our City Beat reporter, were talking about this on Monday, and just about how we have named this 5 acres. We've got two names now. We have the Arts and Culture District. Now it's the 5-acre district. Maybe we just keep it as the 5-acre district. I mean, just name it that.
Maybe we have a naming competition. I don't know, quite frankly. Fortunately, that's not a decision that I get to make. The property owner is technically the mayor and council, and by default, that's the community. So perhaps you've lit the fuse that I've got to work with the mayor and council and our communications team, and we should have some type of a naming exercise.
Yeah. Hey, I also wanted to ask you, I remember this happened a while ago, because I remember asking you about a staff report, and it's like, how come your name's on it instead of Jen McGrath, who was kind of heading up the Bonanza Park planning? Has she left? Is she gone?
She did. Probably about 2 months ago, Jen transitioned out of our organization. And so I think Jen was here for almost two and a half years and did some incredible work for us in the community development department, sort of knitting building, planning, engineering, and housing together. So wish nothing but great wishes for Jen, and thankful for her contributions here. We're very fortunate to have Michelle Downard with the organization, who is our deputy building official for the long time, who is the project manager for the 5-acre site. So she's been doing all the logistical and technical aspects of the request for statement of qualifications and the deadlines and responding to questions and working with the mayor and the council liaison in this endeavor. So wish nothing but well for Jen, but we're lucky to have a strong team behind her.
Sure. And do you replace that? I mean, that was a deputy city manager position.
That's my plan. We have two relatively large openings at the organization right now. One is our economic development director. I hope to have an announcement any day now. Very, very excited about that recruitment process and hopefully bringing it to fruition. And while concurrently, I've used that word a couple times, I hope to be posting the new deputy city manager position any day now.
Okay, you've budgeted for it.
We have budgeted for it. That's correct.
Okay, Matt, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. I appreciate it. Good luck today.
That's Park City City Manager, Matt Dyche. In the studio now with an update from Park City Sailing, I have Scott Van Maris along with Ken Block. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see, Scott, maybe you start by telling us that Park City Sailing has an outreach program. What's that?
Yeah, the outreach program is designed to reach out to people who might not think about sailing. We're providing sailing to some of the local camps to come experience sailing. We're also looking to offer some of the benefits and therapeutic aspects of sailing to maybe some treatment programs. We work with the NAC from time to time, working with different adaptive programming. And we really just want people to know that sailing is a great modality for recreation therapy or just education. So there's a lot of people out there that might want to come join us.
All right. So Ken, you want to tell us a little bit more about that therapeutic sailing? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, we started at the highest level, and we call it socially impactful sailing. And most sailing programs are little clusters with a fence, and sign says, for members only. And we've absolutely just flipped the switch on that, and we've become as completely inclusive as possible. But we also recognize that there was a connection between people's therapeutic journeys and the actual sailing of a sailboat and the journeys that sailing can take you on. We were just talking in the lobby. We were literally the first sailing program to coin the phrase therapeutic sailing. And today, when you Google it, you're going to see that there's actually three or four people above us in the Google ranking. So it's become really popular. We're very involved in addiction recovery. We're just involved in every potential psychological challenge that a person can have, in addition to all of the classic, what I'll call, adaptive sailing programs. We have, you know, strong relationships with other programs. So if a person is missing limbs, a person is missing sight, it's, you know, special orders don't upset us. We literally do everything we can to get people to enjoy the feeling of sailing. But there's also this incredible state when you close your eyes on a sailboat and there's this just white sound and you feel like you're almost a fish, and as the way a sailboat kind of motions its way through the water, and you literally lapse into a state of mindfulness without even realizing that you've arrived there.
Yeah, but how easy it is to get people that may have more physical challenges to get on and off a boat and actually do the work?
Well, that's our job. Scott and I think are the only two certified adaptive sailing instructors in the state of Utah. We've gone through certification for this, and there are lots of challenges, and the Jordanelle is not 100% ideal for this because of the wave state and where our docks are, but we've got a lot of big, strong people, and that's really what it takes. And we've brought people on and off boats, and, you know, from their wheelchairs, and so many of the people in wheelchairs are more able than you would ever realize. They've empowered themselves to drive a car, and they literally pop out of their chair. We help them onto the dock. We have this, we call it the reverse butt scooch. It's a very famous maneuver, how you can get on a boat at the dock. And sometimes we bring an additional person on board to help stabilize them, and off we go.
Yeah, you had mentioned, Scott, that working with the National Ability Center, but you're also doing work with the Salt Lake Veterans Administration?
Yeah, so we've been working with the Salt Lake VA for a number of years. One of the things worth mentioning is, so we've participated in proving the efficacy of mindfulness and sailing and treating PTSD and substance abuse. And so, as Ken said, the benefits of sailing, there are many of them. Mindfulness of being out on the water and having being able to be present with what you're doing is a big part of that therapy. So we had veterans come down, and they would do their mindfulness training on shore, and they would switch and they would come sailing. And there are some medical journals that have been published about the efficacy of how this all worked. And since then, we've been able to have the VA sailing with us for at least 7 days per year. And then it has also led to a partnership with the Warrior Sailing Program, what we're proud to work with. And so in a couple weeks, we're gonna have over 24 vets in our classroom and on the water doing a 3-day training camp. And that's something that we do annually. So yeah, the veteran aspect of our therapeutic sailing is a big piece.
Yeah, so what does it take to be an adaptive sailing coach, instructor?
So the governing body of the sport is called U.S. Sailing, and they have a suite of certifications. Scott and I hold a number of them, and one of the lesser known ones is adaptive sailing. You spend literally 3 days with this phenomenal woman named Betsy Allison, who is a Paralympian, cancer survivor. There's nothing that stops this woman. And you get there, and she takes you step by step. But the most interesting thing is you see this pile of junk. There's a chair with the legs cut off. There's duct tape. There's rope. There's all these things. And from that, she teaches you to be absolutely creative, that there's nothing that you can't do with a piece of line, some duct tape, drilling an extra hole on a boat to strap the chair in place. And at some point, and we've not purchased any of the adaptive boats. They're quite expensive. But there are boats now, including the sip and puff technology, that are available for people that are, you know, have complete spinal cord injuries. But We've yet to turn anyone away saying we can't do that.
Yeah, and why the decision then? I mean, because again, you guys just started out as a sailing club, and it was about, you know, teaching kids how to sail, and then an opportunity for families to kind of to do it together. Why the decision now to expand this to the
socially? I can say one thing, and I'll let Ken take this. I have a background in experiential therapy, so I have a passion for it. But if it weren't for Ken, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to really dive into it here with sailing. So, Ken, why don't you speak to that?
Sometimes just pieces fall into your lap, and you figure out how to arrange them. And it literally goes back. We had received a donation of these 8 Elliott 6-meter sailboats, Olympic caliber boats, which were way beyond what we really needed here on the beautiful Jordanelle. And with a partnership with the NAC, Gail Loveland, who was then the executive director, knew some of our people. And before you know it, she brought 24 wounded women warriors who were dealing with sexual harassment in the military. And we went out for a sail that afternoon. And for many of us, it changed our lives. And my wife, who drove me here, because I'm just recovering from a hip replacement, and she looked at me and said, "Your life just changed." And she did, she was right. It completely changed. And we've just gone off in this direction. You know, Scott mentioned these 3 published papers that we did with Dr. Bill Marchand, who is the chief psychiatrist at the VA. They're literally the only 3 published papers that quantify the results. And because of this, and it's on the internet, we hear from programs, used to say around the country, but now around the world. The other thing that this has done for Scott and I is we have become ambassadors. We have spoken at national conferences. We've been asked to coach at other programs. A year ago, Scott had the privilege of sailing the Chicago to Mackinac race with a boatload of ex-warriors who had just learned to sail. Coached at national handicap sailing championships. So it's just really opened the door. And I think maybe that's one of the more unique things about us is that this is no longer just Park City sailing. We've become ambassadors for this different genre of sailing, and people are reaching out to us as far away as Sydney, Australia.
Wow, impressive. I got to leave it there, but a real quick plug for your fall regatta that's happening same weekend as the beer festival, so you can drink beer or come sail.
That's right, Leslie. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Scott and
Ken.